from Team Serolongo, and you're watching TheFightNerd.com.
This is Kenny Sugarfree Couture, and you're watching TheFightNerd.com.
This is the Fight Professor, Stephen Quadros, and you're listening to Fight Nerd Radio.
John Wertheim, author of Blood and Key. Got schooled by
FightNerd.com. This is Marty Kamen. You're listening to FightNerd.com. Today's an Africa tour, and he just got schooled by the Fight Nerd.
You see it? What is it? We came, we saw, we kicked its ass.
Not quite live from New York. You're listening to Fight Nerd Radio.
Hey, this is the Fight Nerd, and welcome to another edition of Fight Nerd Radio. Today is July 23rd, 2009, and if it seems like you just listened to my show, you're right. But this is an episode that needed to get out sooner than later, and that's why I'm rushing this guy out before next Monday, when I usually put my podcast out. It's been a strange week already in mixed martial arts, and it needs to be talked about while it's still fresh. So we're going to talk about Barnett vs. Fedor, or rather, Belfort vs. Fedor, and also clear up this Chemo is Dead mess. And we're going to have Chemo Leopoldo himself on the show to talk about this. And coming up later, we also will have Paul Buontello, who is fighting Gilbert Ivel on the Affliction Trilogy card. So stick around, it's been a hell of a week, and it's not over yet. Before we get too deep, just want to shout out to my sponsors, CagesideMMA.com, HoodlumFightGear.com, BostonBrawler.com, and FindMMAGym.com. So check them out after the show. So the biggest news right now is that Josh Barnett's marquee match against Fedor Emelianenko is off. That wacky California State Athletic Commission has not licensed the baby-faced assassin because of a positive test result. The substance in question is an anabolic steroid, specifically 2A-methyl-5-A-androstan-3-A-O-L-17-1, more affectionately known as drostanolone, which is, interestingly enough, the same drug that Hermes Franca tested positive for against Sean Sherk at UFC 73. Barnett is currently fighting this decision, and there is still a second sample that is waiting to be tested, but as of now, the fight is officially off, and we have a replacement set up. The three men that were rumored to take the match were Bobby Lashley, Brett Rogers, and Vitor Belfort. Lashley declined the fight smartly due to his inexperience, and Brett Rogers was turned down, allegedly for asking for too much money, his price tag being $800,000, which is a bit much. But then again, it is Fedor. It seems that Vitor Belfort will step up to the plate to take on the Last Emperor and will rob us of seeing his match against George Santiago, sadly. But really, that's not much of a loss compared to not seeing Josh Barnett taking on Fedor Emelianenko. Over the last few weeks, the MMA community has been hyping its board shorts off for this match, and the majority of hardcores believe this match was to determine who really was the best in the world. You know, we have the number one ranked fighter in the world taking on the number two ranked fighter in the world, and it's really the only logical match left for these two men at this time, since right now, Lesnar vs. Fedor is kind of unnecessary, but that's just for right now. We've already seen Fedor beat former UFC champions, including Tim Sylvia, Andrei Arlovski. He's defeated Antonio Arduga Nogueira twice, Mirko Krokop, Mark Coleman twice, back when that counted for something. And how many other fighters have a record as amazing as him with the caliber of fighters he has taken on? Aside from the freak show fights, which you can't blame him for, every fighter needs to have a bone thrown to him every now and then, and there's plenty of guys on his level that have had easy fights like that. Barnett was the last real test for him, since Couture is a bit too old at this point, in my opinion, to really offer much to Fedor. Lesnar is still a bit too green, but I'm sure we'll probably see that fight at some point in the future, if we can get him into the UFC, or Fedor somewhere, or Fedor and Lesnar somewhere else. We'll see how that pans out, but, you know, there'd be a lot of other fighters that could prove interesting to fight Fedor Emelianenko, but really, only Barnett matters in my book, and to a lot of other fans out there who are big fans of Fedor and Barnett, and MMA in general. Sadly for Barnett, this could be serious trouble for him, since it's the second time he has tested positive for steroids in his career. The first time was way back after his match against Randy Couture, back in the UFC, and up until Affliction banned, Barnett has only fought in Japan since 2003, where there is no commission to really oversee any testing done. All this does is fuel the fire to Pride haters, people who aren't really big fans of Japanese fighting, who claim that all former Pride fighters were steroiders. And really, can we consider this as proof? Might be. I am a huge Josh Barnett fan, and I know I was disappointed to hear he tested positive for steroids, as were many other big fans of his. But in the fairness of journalistic integrity, it's my duty to report what happens with no spin. The fact is, Barnett tested positive for a banned substance, and we have been robbed of what could have been Fight of the Year. Does this prove that all fighters who fought in Pride were on steroids when they fought in Japan? Not really, but it doesn't help the situation too much either. On that same token, this is the California State Athletic Commission, and they have screwed many a fighter, and they've screwed many a show before in the past. This is the same commission that almost shut down the entire K1 Dynamite show in 2007. the same commission that suspended Hermes Franca despite his admission to taking steroids. They came down twice as hard as it did for Sean Shirk, who also tested positive at that show, and suspended him for a year and fined him. And again, of course, Sean Shirk, as I just mentioned, had to ferociously battle against the California State Athletic Commission, as well as Alexa Davis and Antonio Silva, and I'm sure many, many other fighters have had to deal with this problem as well in the bigger leagues. Something is fishy in the California State Athletic Commission, and Affliction does continue to have shows. Let's hope they head somewhere else for their fourth show. We're going to talk about the fate of Affliction a bit later on in the show, as well as my picks for Affliction Trilogy, but that's the latest on what's been happening in the Barnett vs. Fedor fiasco, which has now turned into Belfort vs. Fedor, and we'll cover that as it happens. Also to note is that Alistair Overeem's match against Fabricio Werdum in Strikeforce's upcoming show on August 15th is also off, due to Overeem's hand still being injured from that street fight. I had actually just interviewed Scott Coker at the Corano Cyborg press conference last week in New York City, and that interview will be on the site by next week, if not sooner. And I had actually questioned him about Overeem's hand in the interview, and his response was not exactly too confident, and he really just kind of avoided actually answering the question. So even last week, there was doubt in Overeem's hands from the promoter himself and his ability to fight. So something, again, is a bit fishy there. I'm not sure if Werdum will still have a fight at the show, but we'll keep you updated once there is some news there. There are still, of course, three other title fights happening on that show, including Gina Carano and Chris Cyborg, Melendez and Thompson, and Riddick's vs. Diaz. So really, missing one title fight isn't that big of a deal. On to the other big news of this quick week. Kimo Leopoldo is dead. Well, no, not really. This story starts on the Underground Forum, where a certain poster by the name of Reggie Warren Sr., a.k.a. OMA, posted something, not even an article, mind you, just a write-up, that said Kimo had died from a heart attack. Mind you, there was absolutely no source to back up his facts, just pure word of mouth. Well, somehow, a few other sites picked this up as being legit, and then things got really out of hand when the New York Daily News scooped it up, as well as CNN, and then TMZ, all the while not actually confirming anything. In fact, TMZ had the best line on their site, saying they confirmed that Kimo was dead, but then one sentence later, saying they actually didn't quite confirm it just yet. And in fact, since then, TMZ has actually removed the story entirely from their website, not even correcting it or following up on it, but just deciding to erase history and their mistake. Now, I personally knew not to believe that crap, because, you know, it wasn't actually any sources to back it up. It was just a post on the Underground. It's a forum, you know, it's not exactly a reputable site for news, it's a forum, and anybody can say whatever they want. And I actually called a mutual friend who is very good friends with Kimo, and waited to hear back from him to confirm any news, but he also had no luck getting through either. You know, at that point, no one had actually been able to talk to Kimo or even locate him, so, you know, it could have been possible, no one really knew what was happening. SureDog.com actually proved to be one of the only credible news sources in this fiasco, not posting any articles on that potential story because there were no facts. Eventually, it was disproved, and Kimo reappeared from the afterlife and said he had been sleeping and was actually awoken to this great big screw-up. Needless to say, he was pissed about this and did a press conference earlier today to fill in the fans about what went on. So joining me now to clear up this whole mess is the man himself, Kimo Leopoldo. Kimo, thanks for being here.
Aloha, brother, man.
So what's it like being back from the dead right now?
It's like I'm taking one step at a time because things just yesterday happened so quickly and it was like taking giant steps, you know, things just happened so quickly and I traveled so much distance. It was, it's just a shock. I'm just trying to get grounded right now.
And what was it like to basically wake up and get a phone call saying that you were dead?
Well, actually, I woke up to my manager waking, my promoter waking me up because, personally and telling me about it, and I didn't really sink in until, you know, I got back to the house and went on the computer and went on the internet and saw in black and white, and when I did that, it was just it's not a good feeling.
Now I can definitely imagine. I mean, this whole mess started on a post, in fact, on the Underground Forum, and then somehow it got blown up to mainstream press and all this. I mean, personally, for me, just so, hearing this happen with MMA journalism is just disgusting. I mean, what do you think about how this story was treated? There was no actual facts being checked from anyone, even mainstream sources like TMZ and CNN who cover this. There was no actual fact-checking. I mean, what do you think about that?
I just think it's kind of a blessing in disguise for me because my whole career has been like this. You know, I've been actually just misrepresented in the press throughout my whole career, and you know, it's hard to explain to somebody because people believe print over me because, oh, it's got to be true. It was written in the press. Well, here's a situation where they claimed I was dead and I'm not dead. So it was, you know, unargumentable proof and evidence, you know, this time.
And especially considering there's, you know, again, no actual fact-checking done for this story. This whole thing started on a website in a forum, and somehow it got blown up. I mean, how do you think it got so blown up to begin with?
I don't know. You know, just within the last 20 minutes, I found out who actually started the rumor, and I kind of read a little bit about his motivation behind it, and I saw a picture of him, and it just, to me, it feels almost weird, kind of like a stalker, serial killer kind of like situation where the guy is just probably not all there and chose me just out of a random and you know, so I don't really have a gripe with the guy because I don't think he really thought it was going to go this big, but as far as the media, you know, it's just, I'm glad it exposes what I've been talking about as the unaccountability that the media has had and the one-sided, biased, just misrepresentation the media has done.
I mean, not just how bad this is for your career, but I mean, what do you think this is going to do for MMA journalism as a whole? Because this kind of showed, I think, a very negative outlet of the press, kind of covering things with no actual fact-checking, no real sources. How do you think this is going to affect journalism as a whole in mixed martial arts?
Well, I'll give you an example. I was had a few running with the police a couple months back in Tustin, where TMZ and Sherdog both jumped on this thing, and Sherdog went ahead and went so far as to make a couple statements that weren't true. They settled out of court. They recant their statement and wrote another statement. When this thing went down yesterday or the day before yesterday, whatever, Sherdog didn't even report on it. So that shows you the hesitation that they learned from their mistakes. So I think that the MMA in general now is woken up a little bit, shaken a little bit, that they're going to slow down and they're going to make sure that they got the facts correctly before they put this down.
Yeah, definitely hope so. I mean, so many sites just cover rumors, and this is just one of them. It wasn't even a rumor to begin with. It was just an absolute straight-out lie. Now, I'm not sure how much you're willing to mention, but are you going to be legally pursuing any action in this?
You know, I'm not a legally... I'm from Hawaii. We handle things the old-fashioned way. But unfortunately, you know, we live in a society of not barbarian with barbarianism. So, you know, I'm going to fight, and the only way I'm going to be able to fight is legally. And yes, I'm going to go after these guys. I'm not about money. That's not my motivation. It's never been, if you follow my career. But justice, and you know, so that the next person, the other person that may fall down this road, won't get the same thing done to them.
Can you tell us any more information about the person who did this, or any other information about him?
Yeah, he's from Oklahoma. He's about, I think he said he was like about 150. He's a martial arts trainer. He's trained with such athletes as Chuck Liddell, the Gracies. He's got a 3-0 record. He's 150 pounds. He got arrested a couple of days ago for being passed out in his car in a parking lot with alcohol in the car. He seems, and the picture that in his picture arrest photo, he's smiling, and it's not a smile like it's a little eeriness to a smile, you know.
A little stalkerish.
And then his comment on the smile was he didn't want his picture to look like a Nick Nolte or a one of those type of pictures, what it wouldn't look like, because those guys were on drugs and were cracked out at the time and their pictures were sucked up. He's looking pretty healthy. It's just, he looks mentally like he's got something going on upstairs that's not quite right.
Okay, now, as you mentioned, there has been a lot of allegations in the past about your drug use and a lot of other things, and now this has happened. What do you have to say to your critics at this moment?
You know, I put myself into a public venue, you know, when I went ahead and came out with the cross. I haven't come up with the cross since because, you know, I've been backslidden and I've done some choices that I know don't go with that lifestyle. I still believe it, but I know I'm not a hypocrite to carry the cross and represent it to that point. as far as my critics go, you know, people are entitled to their opinions. It's America. They're free to say whatever they want to say, do whatever they want to do. As long as they don't get my loved ones involved or other people involved, I don't have a problem with it. It's when they start to hurt my family, my friends, and my fans that it really gets under my skin.
All right, now, the one positive thing out of this is that you have been put back in the spotlight because of this craziness. And I know you mentioned you did want to have one more fight in your career, so what's going on next for Kimo Leopoldo?
You know, I was hoping that this guy, that this rumor, or whatever you call it, was a little bit bigger. I was hoping he'd be about my size, because that would have been a good fight, you know. But he's only 150 pounds, so it wouldn't be much of a challenge for me. So, you know, but if the audience out there that's hearing this goes to fightindian.com and vote that they would like to see me fight again, that'll give me not only motivation, it'll give me some bargaining power to put together a plan and pick an opponent, and I'll do it one more last fight.
All right, sounds good. Anything else you'd like to add?
I'd like to say, you know, that, you know, when the MMA sport started to evolve into a sport from where it started, from bare knuckle, I held a grudge because I'm more of a raw fighter. I use my head. I'm a headbutt guy. I'm more raw. So I kind of held a grudge towards the sport. And as it started getting towards the sport, they took away a lot of my weapons, which would have, it limited me as far as my performance. But now that, you know, now that I see it as different light, that I see it in the light of sportsmanship and love and, mainstream where kids are into it and just the popularity of sport, I'm just very happy that I'm associated with something that is just as awesome as MMA.
All right, well, thank you very much for your time, Kimo, and good luck in your legal pursuit. Hopefully you'll keep us updated on what goes on with that.
Thank you, Matt. Much aloha.
All right, aloha to you. So there you have it, straight from the horse's mouth himself. Say what you want about Kimo, say what you want about his past and all the allegations and what has actually happened in his past and his fight career, but what right did the original poster on that forum have, let alone the mainstream media, to post this garbage story that wasn't even a story to begin with? I'm rushing this podcast out purely because I'm so disgusted at not just the mainstream media, but MMA journalism as a whole. I'm not a reporter, I didn't go to school to become one, and I don't claim to be one either. I'm a super hardcore fan who decided to turn my passion into a business, and I'm trying to do so one day at a time and improve my skills each passing day. I've been trying to get into this sport for quite some time, and I think I've got myself a nice little foothold now, but nonetheless, I'm still not a serious reporter like many other people are out there, from a lot of guys like SureDog.com, like Loretta Hunt, and Josh Gross, many other people like that who are legit. But there are so many MMA sites that are just pure trash. I'm not going to name names, but how many sites are there that post rumors of no real credibility or fact-checking and run them as real stories? Too many, in my opinion. As Kimo mentioned, SureDog didn't actually post the story because they knew to check their facts and sources before making something this big a full-fledged story. Too many sites that claim to be news sites spend half their day just posting rumors, not going out and being journalists, checking their facts, getting their stories straight, and this is one of those cases where things just got purely out of hand. And really, I have to give hats off to that thread starter because he proved one of the biggest flaws in internet news. Just like a little while back when a 22-year-old student in Ireland changed something on Wikipedia that the Associated Press actually picked up as fact. With all this information so readily available, it seems that so many reporters just forget the code of ethics and how to actually report. You can say what you will about my site as well. I barely even cover real news, and that's for a reason right now. I'm not trying to compete as a news site. I'm mostly an editorial site that covers a lot more nerdy things like the video games, toys, some news here and there, and my interviews and techniques. And I work out kinks in being a better journalist on my own and having the kind of ability it takes to report for real. But at least I didn't pick up on a trashy rumor. How many other sites did you go to yesterday that did? Enough of my rant. We're going to take a quick break, and after that, we're going to talk with the headhunter, Paul Buentello, so stick around for that. Fight Nerd Radio is sponsored by Cageside MMA, carrying brands from around the world such as Triumph United, Clinch Gear, Twins, Windy, and Bad Boy, as well as their own well-crafted brand of Cageside MMA products. CagesideMMA.com is your internet superstore for all MMA gear and apparel. battle-tested and fighter-approved, you won't find better quality or better service from any other site carrying their variety of gear, apparel, and workout equipment. Head over to CageSideMMA.com where you can shop 24/7 or call 919-477-1999 Monday through Friday. If you don't, you'll regret it. CageSideMMA.com. And welcome back to Fight Nerd Radio. Coming up on August 1st, Gilbert Ivel will make his return to the Affliction Ring against this man we have with us right now, the headhunter, Paul Buentello. Paul, thanks for being here.
That's great, great, thanks.
So how's training going right now for this fight?
Oh, it's going rough. You know, it's a little different. You know, I was scheduled to match up Tim Sylvia, so going against Gilbert Ivel just really throws a monkey wrench into the training and the game planning and stuff like that, so... It was a little hard transition because we already had our mind focused and our game plan set for fighting Tim, so this came just in time and we just had to race the dry board and start the training. But kind of basically started all over again, started doing different stuff because of because Gilbert Ivel.
Do you have a special camp set up right now for this fight, or are you just kind of doing what you usually do to prepare for a fight?
No, just the game planning. You know, it's same game plan. You know, same training partners. You know, Kyle Kingsbury, Mike Kyle, Kane Velasquez. You know, Bobby Southworth. You know, got personal trainers. You know, just got. It's the same thing. It's just developing the game plan and following it through during practice.
Now, since you know since this is coming in on a little bit shorter notice, have you had a chance to really look at Gilbert Ivel that much and prepare for any exact weaknesses, or are you just kind of going in there and just preparing to bang?
Yeah, I'm going in there to bang. You know, we have a game plan set, you know, knowing that if Gilbert stands with me, it's gonna be a deal. But if, you know, my trainers always tell me every time I hit somebody, they want to take me down. So hopefully Gilbert will take my shot and wipe it off, shake it off, and still want to stand up. Let's test our stand up. And, I watch Gilbert fight plenty of times. So, you know, just knowing fighting his caliber stand up is already hard work as it is.
Did you happen to catch his last fight against Pedro Hizo?
No, I heard about it. I didn't get to watch it, but, you know, I heard about it. And every question I asked, you know, about the way he looked and how he attacked, everything else was, you know, all yes. You know, he comes out to fight. He comes out 100 miles an hour. You know, they don't call him the Hurricane for nothing.
Yeah, well, they don't call you the headhunter for nothing either, so.
That's true.
And now, you've been pretty much fighting nonstop since the start of your career with very little amount of break time in between. Even right now, with Affliction, it's slowed down a little bit. But generally, do you prefer to stay active, or do you like to have breaks in between your fights?
I prefer to stay active. It's just, you know, all the scheduling and all the politics involved in the sport, you know, really slowed down the pace. But, you know, my whole objective, you know, I'm not no spring chicken. I got to get in there and get the fight done.
All right, so I want to talk a little about now your hands right now, because we've seen your hands pretty much, you know, grow in a long time since we first started seeing you in King of the Cage. What do you attribute to your hand power and speed changing since that time?
All it is just getting comfortable and, you know, working with Ted Lucio, which is our main boxing coach here at AKA, and, you know, just getting comfortable, letting it go, and I think it's just experience. You know, with the career fight, I just had that experience to control every aspect of the fight, so I guess it showed that I had the experience to sit there and bang. It's just getting comfortable, you know, and in the striking world, you have to be able to give a hit to take a hit, and I'm just living by that now.
So what do you think about a lot of boxers who say there's no real striking ability in MMA? Do you have a response to any of those comments?
No, because, you know, boxing hurts. You know, I'm not gonna lie. Boxing is a whole different fight. You know, you got two guys, who's the fastest and who can hit each other the hardest and who can hit the most. In MMA, you know, if I get hit pretty hard, I can hold on to you for for the rest of the round and not let you swing nothing. And I get penalized in boxing. It's just straight grunt, you know, who hits the hardest and who has the big balls. And boxing is a little bit too dangerous for me.
So you're staying out of boxing for the time being?
Yeah, I'll stay out of boxing for the time being. Unless, you know, something comes around and it's pretty interesting for me. But, you know, boxing is a different, you know, different cardio, different strength, different, you know, head movement. You got to have really good head movement. You got to have your good hands. You got to be sharp on every aspect. And you got to be able to take body blows, and it just, man, boxing is just rough.
But what do you think about Andrei Arlovsky, who happened to be an opponent you fought a while back? What do you think about him training with Freddie Roach right now? Do you think that's a smart move? He's been training with Freddie Roach for a while now. Do you think it's a smart move for him to be training strictly for boxing?
I think it's a good move, but is it too much for Arlovsky? Because, you know, Arlovsky's never really been a striker, and can he develop and put it into the MMA? And it looked like he kind of slowed down a little bit from, you know, being straight MMA. You know, you take boxing and you mold it into MMA. You don't just take boxing and take it into MMA. There's no way it's going to work. You know, it's different footing. It's different everything. And I think Arlovsky is not making that transition well with boxing into MMA. You know, he looks a little bit slower. You know, he's cleaner on his punches and stuff, but his stance is a little off. You know, he's not kicking as much. I don't think he's all together yet.
Now, speaking of Arlovsky, you guys fought way back at UFC 55. Are you interested in taking him on a rematch?
Oh, totally. You know, that option, I always throw that option out there. You know, we crossed paths a couple of times to fight in Strikeforce, but that didn't go through. And then I had a chance to, you know, fight him again in Strikeforce. But, you know, just the timing. You know, it's all politics and timing. It just doesn't work out right. And, you know, yeah, that rematch is pretty good on my head. You know, he's just a good competitor, and I know that if we fight again, it won't be the same outcome.
Has Arlovsky been offered to you for any Affliction fights?
What's that?
Has Arlovsky been offered to you to fight against each other in Affliction or just in Strikeforce?
No, it was Affliction and Strikeforce combined kind of deal, and no, it hasn't came back to fight him in Affliction. You know, now that, you know, he's had two straight losses, I don't know where his head's at and what's his next move.
Now, speaking of Overeem, like you just mentioned, you guys just also fought not too long ago. What do you think about Overeem right now, where he stands right now in the heavyweight rankings?
It's just funny, you know. It's funny in his rankings. Yeah, you know, he's doing a good job. He's winning because he's fought me. But it's funny how a guy will fight me. I haven't been top 10 forever, and the guy will fight me, and as soon as he fights me, he's in the top 10, which don't make too much sense to me. But it's just how the guys look at it, I guess. And, you know, he's doing good. He's eating a lot of horse meat, you know. And I guess he's doing good. You know, that's just the thing is he's doing good right now. You know, I guess all that horse meat that he's eating is really helping him out.
And I assume you'd like another shot at him sometime in the future too, right?
Oh, definitely around the future. You know, he has Verdum on the next August 15th show. So, you know, I don't think Verdum really has much for him. I think Verdum's just going to try to take him down and try to, you know, hold him out. But Overeem does have a good ground and pound and stuff. And, you know, it'd be nice to get another shot at that title. The last time he fought me, I wasn't 100%. You know, I wasn't all there. You know, he didn't fight the real me. So I'm really looking forward if I ever get that fight again that I get to put.
I look forward.
Everything be clear out of my head and everything be great and just kick his ass.
Look forward to seeing you do that sometime.
Yeah.
Now, where do you see yourself in the heavyweight rankings? Since you just mentioned, you know, you always fight a lot of guys and they seem to just jump right into the top 10 after they fight you. Where do you see yourself standing in those ranks?
You know, definitely top 20. You know, it's just one of those deals that just. You know, I have a good, you know, fair with friends, you know, fans that are out there. But, you know, I guess the critics are the ones that are hard to beat. You know, the fans will put me in the top 10 in a heartbeat because it's just my heart. You know, maybe not my skill or anything, but I think the critics are the ones that are hard to impress. All the guys that make these rankings, that, you know, I've only lost two fights in the last, 3 years. And, you know, I don't get that kind of love from the critics.
Now, with Affliction being non-exclusive contracts, have you had any offers to go fight in Japan, maybe, and kind of make a name for yourself over there?
No offers really came in. I don't know. Crazy Bob handles all that. But, you know, since I have a contract with Affliction and a contract with Strikeforce, you know, I'm in a good position right now. You know, Strikeforce has the Showtime thing going. They're going to have probably, you know, 50 shows next year, probably, what they're saying, probably 25 shows. So, you know, look for next year to be really busy. Maybe at the end of this year I get another fight, too, as well. With Strikeforce, and you know, no, I haven't had offers from Japan. It'd be interesting to go over there. I don't know if I can handle the crowds or the fans because they're pretty quiet during when you fight over there.
Yeah, I'm sure you can rile them up. They love the big American guys. You could probably get them going pretty easy.
Yeah, that's true.
All right, now, you fought for many different companies, like I mentioned, King of the Cage, you were a UFC veteran, now you're fighting for, you fought for Strikeforce, now you're fighting in Affliction. How has Affliction treated you compared to other companies?
You know, Affliction is right up there, top, you know, A on everything. They don't demand anything from you, they just want you to show up and do your job, and they don't put any stipulation that you have to do this and do that. They give you a great contract, and all they want you to do is come in and fight hard. You know, from showing up to the hotel to being at the hotel, the weigh-ins, everything, they never ask anything extra of you. And you know, if you're you know, doing certain things for your fight, they totally agree on that, and they totally just let you do what you got to do, not force you to do so many things. If they want you to put all your effort towards fighting, and that's one thing I like about Affliction, that they really understand that the fighters are the show. If Affliction didn't have the fighters, there wouldn't be no Affliction show.
On the topic of no Affliction show, people are saying that this might be the very last show, especially with the name being called Trilogy. Now, even though Tensio has, of course, said that that's not the fact, being an inside man, what do you think is going to happen with Affliction after this show? Do you think they're going to continue, or do you think this might be the end of the Affliction's MMA experiment?
You know, I have a good feeling they're going to be around. I have a good feeling they're going to be around probably, you know, next year, too. I have a really good feeling they're going to be around. I mean, they're starting to trim the fat off. They're starting to get different people off the card that, you know, they've really over budgeted for, and I think they have a good thing coming. Everybody's starting; they're building a good brand. I also have a good feeling they're going to be around for a while.
Hey, now you were, of course, also at the first Affliction show. I want to ask you if you know a little bit inside scoop on this. You were supposed to fight Alexander Emelianenko initially at Affliction 1, correct?
Yeah.
And he had to pull out at the last minute because of some medical reason, and you ended up having Gary Goodridge as your opponent instead. At the very last minute, luckily Gary was there. Now, there's been still a lot of words, you know, back and forth. No one's really sure what happened, but maybe you know on the inside. Is it true that Alexander is not really medically cleared to fight in the U.S. because of hepatitis or anything like that?
You know, he didn't pass his medicals, and it's one of those things that where he's not going to be cleared for a while. You know, the rumors are true. So, you know, that's what they told me. You know, he's not going to be able to fight for a while. And I don't think anybody had the balls to tell him that. You know, he didn't pass his medicals, and I think that's why it all came out. That's why it's all different stories, but that's what they say.
All right, so ladies, watch out for Alexander Emelianenko. All right, so looking past this fight now, who would you like to take on after Gilbert Ivel?
You know, I don't know, because all I'm focused on is Gilbert Ivel. I've never really looked past any opponent I've fought. You know, I'm always considered the underdog every time I walk into a fight, which is great because there's no pressure for me. And I'm excited that I'm an underdog again and come into this fight. So it just motivates me more to train harder and get ready and prove these critics. You know, these critics are my worst enemy right now. And that gave me the love that, you know, the respect or even the partial love that I need. You know, I've done a lot of hard work. I didn't take no easy roads. I didn't jump into no reality show and go straight to the top. I fought every fight that came to me. I didn't question who I was fighting. I took the fights from last minute notice to, you know, days, and you know, I'm a gamer. Every time I fight hard for the fans, I fight hard for myself, and I'm not looking past Gilbert one bit. I just want to get past this fight and see what doors open, and that's all I'm focusing on is beat Gilbert and see what doors open, see what happens.
All right, well, since we're talking about Affliction, I'm obligated to ask you, do you want a piece of Fedor at some point in the future?
You know, that'd be nice. You know, he's like the Dylan of MMA right now. You fight Fedor, and you know you're gonna get decent money, and it's a chance to, you know, try to show the world that you're gonna give him a run for his money. But you know, that's you know, I don't know how far that's down the line or whatever. That's gonna get past this crazy hurricane and you know, subdue his weather and get after that and find out what's gonna happen.
That was a good pro wrestling promo right there, by the way. You a big fan of pro wrestling?
No, I make fun of it a lot. I'm not a good fan of it.
All right, well, on the topic of Fedor, I got to ask too, since the main event at Affliction is going to be Fedor taking on Josh Barnett, who's your pick for that fight?
You know, I'm picking Josh Barnett because he's wanted this fight for no telling how many years, and you know, he's beat everybody in front of it. It just doesn't happen. And I honestly feel that Barnett's putting his best foot forward and he's training right, and I think he's gonna shock the world with Fedor.
All right, well, we're going to see on August 1st what happens with that match. Now, I also want to talk about something else coming up soon. In September, we're going to be seeing The Ultimate Fighter Season 10, and in that season, we're going to have Kimbo Slice. And you've been very outspoken against Kimbo, is that right?
Yeah.
And you've, I don't know if you called him or not. I don't know how much you want to delve into this, but how do you think Kimbo is going to do on the Ultimate Fighter series?
He's not going to do well at all.
How fast?
He's not going to do well at all. I got to give him kudos for jumping in there, and trying to step it up and, get that whole reality thing, because he does have the YouTube and sensation and, he's a feared man or whatever, but, you can't just jump in there. I don't think he has that flexibility to even hang with some of those guys that are going to be on that tough show. I think that UFC is just putting too much behind Kimbo and trying to get that hype, and I don't think he's going to produce anything.
How long do you think Kimbo's going to last on the show?
Are they fighting for the house this time? Is they fight to get in the house? I don't think he's even getting in the house. I mean, he's probably going to order his Jamaican jerk chicken or something, and he's not going to get in there to eat it, so I don't think he's even getting in the house.
How long would he last with you in the octagon?
Seth Pirelli is really taken away from everybody, so I guess I'll get him by the first round, but I don't think that's going to happen anytime soon, because every time, the last time we started negotiating for me to fight him before he became in the MMA, it was all about, no knee strikes, no elbows, no this, no that, or like, no takedowns, no guillotines. And it was so many rules. I thought I was going to a birthday party more than a fight, because they're adding so many rules to it, but that was so long ago. Now he's training, he's putting his best foot forward, trying to learn this MMA game. You got to hand it to him for stepping up and trying to get on the tough show, but, I don't think he's ready for it. A lot of people around him, word gets out that he doesn't train hard. He doesn't want to learn anything. He just wants to stand and bang, and you got to learn every aspect of the sport.
All right, now, pending all the stars were aligned right and things worked out well, if you had an offer to go back to the UFC, would you take them up on it?
I definitely would. But, that's just another chapter. I got to get past Gilbert Eville before I even start, turning that page. I have a good standing with the UFC. I talk to Joe Sylvia every now and then, and I think I still have a good relationship. I just got to keep winning. And that's the main thing. UFC will never take anybody back with a losing record, so I got to just keep winning.
All right, well, since you cut a really nice promo before on Gilbert, I want to ask you one last time. Give me your best pro wrestling style trash talk promo right now on Gilbert Ivel.
Best trash talk. The best trash talk for Gilbert Ivel. You'll never see my tattoo on your body. You never get a chance to tattoo my name on your arm or on your leg. It's going to be too fast. Just keep looking up at the lights. That's all you're going to see and wake up to.
Awesome. All right. So I'm going to cut the interview right here. So if you can't just stay online after, because I want to just get a soundbite from you if you don't mind. Okay. All right, so those are strong words right there from the headhunter, Paul Buentello. He's going to be taking on Gilbert Ivel August 1st on Affliction on pay-per-view. Paul, thank you very much for being here.
All right, thanks.
Fight Nerd Radio is sponsored by Hoodlum Fight Gear. Check out their gear and apparel at hoodlumfightgear.com. Also by Boston Brawler. Whether you're a Red Sox or a Yanks fan, you can't deny good designs. Check out bostonbrawler.com. And also by FindMMAGym.com. Looking for an MMA gym near you? Head to the best site to find your new place to train at FindMMAGym.com. And we are back. And you just heard from Paul, the headhunter Buentello, who will be heading to California in less than 2 weeks to get his hands on Gilbert the Hurricane Ivel at Affliction Trilogy August 1st. So I just want to give my picks real quick for this event so I can have a week off next week for the podcast, since I'm going to need it. In the new main event of Fedor versus Belfort, I'm going to go with Fedor, but I do give Belfort the striker's chance in this match. Vitor is a weight cutter and usually comes into a fight heavy to begin with, but he has been preparing for a middleweight showdown against George Santiago, and that's going to affect his training plan and his weight for this fight. Really, at this point in the match, or this point preparing for the match, how much can Belfort do to compensate for his weight, as well as a new fight strategy for Fedor? I can see this going down much like Fedor's fight against Matt Lindland at Bodog. Since Belfort is no joke at any weight. But nonetheless, he's coming in definitely smaller, and something You know, of course, we have seen Belfort at heavyweight classes before, so it's not like it's going to be difficult for him. But again, he is a weight cutter, and that weight is going to be a difference in his fight game. Belfort is no joke at any weight, though. And we will see which Vitor shows up to fight. But this will be a motivated Belfort, and with hands like his, he could definitely rock Fedor so much that it's easier for me to say that this will be Fedor's longest fight in his history with Affliction. That's not really saying much, since all of his fights have gone pretty short so far to begin with, but I think Belfort will probably give him a much better test than we would have expected. However, in the end, I'm going to go with Fedor based purely on his size and power advantage over Belfort. Don't get me wrong, though, I do give a ton of respect to Vitor for stepping up this late on against this caliber of a fighter. You know, Fedor is Fedor. There's nothing much you can say about him, and Belfort is going to have a tough test at his hands, and win or lose, it's going to be good for him no matter what. If he wins, it's even better, of course. All right, in the matchup of Renato Babalu Sobral taking on Gerard Musashi, I'm going to go with Musashi on this one because he is on a roll right now. He is 10 years younger than Babalu, and has only actually had about 7 or 8 less fights than Babalu. And he's had very, very tough opponents, even in recent times, too. I don't expect to see a decision from this fight. I do see a submission victory over Sobral. What it is, I'm not quite sure yet. But I can see Musashi pretty much having his way. Oh, I don't want to say having his way with Sobral. It's going to be a bit back and forth, but in the end, Musashi will be dominant, and he will take this victory home. In the match of Paul Buontello versus Gilbert Ivel, we just heard from Paul, and I think it's going to be a very, very fun fight to watch. Gilbert Ivel has looked pretty mature in his last fight against Pedro Hizo, and he looked a little bit more calculating than he has in the past. So it'll be interesting to see how Buontello will approach this match when it ends up in the ring and strategy flies out the window. Submission and out-wrestling the Dutchman is the best way to get a win. So if Buontello can apply pressure to Ivel and negate his striking, I can see a win for him. But if Ivel can keep his distance, I think we're going to have a heck of a war on our hands. No matter what, it will probably end up being a crazy war, and in that case, it's really just going to be whoever gets lucky or lands the better blow. And we'll see what that happens. I don't really want to give a prediction on this fight because I just had Buontello on the show, so I wish good luck to Buontello, and I look forward to seeing a slobber knockout of a match. All right, moving on. Takanori Gomi will be fighting in the U.S. for the first time in quite some time against Rafaelo Oliveira. Well, you got to give it to Gomi really based on his experiences alone, although Gomi has never fought guys such as Fabio or Big Big in his career. Oliveira's only real test was his loss to Lyle Bierbaum, so I hope to see Gomi get the win here, even though it will probably take him longer than it should to get that win. And finally, it would appear that Jay Haran's match against Paul Daly will be moved up to the main card instead of being on HDNet, and good for him because he deserves to get on the main card after what happened at the last show, and I'm with Jay Haran on this one all the way, so my pick is for Haran to take that fight. Now what about Affliction as a company? Will they survive to see another show? With their headline fight gone, even though Belfort is picking up the slack, this is bad news for the company. They've been promoting this for quite some time. It's a huge fight for all the hardcores. And granted, those hardcores are still going to watch the show probably no matter what. They're still going to want to see Belfort. They're still going to be interested in seeing Belfort take on Fedor because it's actually a pretty interesting matchup, and it's pretty good. I don't think it's going to affect ticket sales at the show itself in the arena. On pay-per-view, this is where it gets interesting and can really go one of two ways. It'll either be a slight drop in sales, or it really won't make much of a difference. The one thing you have to remember is that Belfort is a former UFC fighter, and even though Affliction can't use that footage to hype him, casual fans who are passing by commercials might actually have some recognition of him, and this could potentially increase viewership ever so slightly just due to UFC syndicating programming, such as their shows you can see on Spike all the time. I mean, how recognizable is Fedor compared to Belfort to the casual fan? And when you think about it, you know, how many casual fans have actually seen Fedor's fights, and how many of them more so have seen possibly Belfort at older UFC shows. I don't think this will really hurt Affliction that much, and I don't think that this one fight will make or break them. I think it's going to be the whole show as the entire show, and how that entire show turns out, how the fights are, how the fights turn out, and how the aftermath of the event turns out as well. I'd like to see Affliction to continue because I want more MMA in my life. I think the real question is, can Affliction afford to keep going, especially on the scale they have? And it's going to really depend on what happens in the ring on that night with all the fighters and not rest on really the shoulders of Belfort and Fedor purely. This could be the swan song of Affliction, and it has been named Trilogy, even though they say it's not going to be the last show. But considering how much they've been paying their fighters and the expenses they've been going through for their shows, if they're going to do a fourth show, it's going to probably take some serious budget cuts to make that happen. So, there you have it, folks. another episode of Fight Nerd Radio in the history books. I want to thank my sponsors, CageSideMMA.com, Hoodlum Fight Gear, Boston Brawler, and FindMMAGym.com for their help. And thanks to my guest, Kimo Leopoldo, who is back from the dead, and Paul Buntel, the headhunter, who again will be fighting Gilbert Ivel at Affliction Trilogy, August 1st. As well as a shout-out to Brett Siciliano from FightDice.com for helping me out with the Kimo interview. Stay tuned to the site for my interview with Scott Coker, as well as some other cool stuff coming your way. And if any people are on the East Coast, check out NYMMAExpo.com. If you're going to be available and able to head out to Long Island, the Uniondale Marriott, on August 2nd, the night day after Affliction, look for me at the NYMMA Expo. I'm going to be walking around in some capacity. So definitely check them out. Once again, NYMMAExpo.com. It's going to be a fun show with a lot of cool guests, including Andre Arlovsky and Sean Shirk. And we will catch you after Affliction Trilogy with a recap of that, and I'm sure plenty more. I'm the Fight Nerd, and thanks for listening.